With virtually limitless design options, Pella is like your personal barista for windows and doors. Customize your order by August 31st and you can bundle and save big at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Get started today at PellaWI.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Come join the conversation on the Old National Bank talk and text line at 855-616-1620. Old National Bank. Get old. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show. So very glad to have you with us. Let us get right to it. And by the way, as we've been reminding people for the last month or so, there's all sorts of ways that you can enjoy the program. You can, of course, listen to it over your radios and the over-the-air broadcasts. You can stream us. Easiest way to do that is go to WTMJ.com. Just click the Listen Live button. You can also watch us. We now have cameras in the studio, and we live stream all the broadcasts. You can see on a daily basis how my wife dresses me. The easiest way to do it, again, go to WTMJ.com, and instead of hitting the Listen Live button, you can hit the Watch Live button. And then you can see how we do spoken word radio. You can also access us through the YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, type in WTMJ, and you'll be able to watch broadcasts, see us live, and then watch broadcasts subsequently. Then I know that there's a lot of you who listen to us on the podcast page as well, because I see those numbers, and we definitely appreciate that. All right. Let's just keep a running tally of, well, kind of the last 24 hours, for example. Here's just a series of stories from either the local newspaper or a number of the TV stations. All right, this is a local newspaper. A 23-year-old man died and a 19-year-old was injured in a crash on the city's north side, Milwaukee police said. The two-vehicle crash occurred around 7:11 p.m. in the 6,000 block of West Hampton Drive. Both men were transported to the hospital following the crash. The 23-year-old man died. The 19-year-old is expected to survive. Police said he is cooperating in the ongoing investigation. Okay, so you've got that. All right, here's the next story. Man, this is from today's TMJ4. Man dead after being shot, crashing car into light pole near 33rd and Cherry. Milwaukee police say a fatal shooting took place near 33rd and Lisbon on Monday. A 44-year-old Milwaukee man was shot around 5:45 p.m. He was able to drive his vehicle to 33rd and Cherry, where he crashed into a light pole. He was pronounced dead at the scene. So, all right, this is, again, within just, about an hour and a half of the incident. Here you have somebody who is shot, killed, drives the car, smashes into a tree. Then you've got this next story. At 10:30 p.m. last night, Monday, near Martin Luther King Drive and Wells Street, according to police, a 38-year-old man was shot and hurt around 10:30 p.m. He is expected to survive. 18-year-old man was also injured in the shooting and is expected to survive. Police say they arrested him and two 17-year-olds. MPD says they believe the shooting may have been robbery-related. Right now, charges are pending review by the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office. So police arrest two 17-year-olds and an 18-year-old. It sounds like to me it was an armed robbery that went bad. My guess is they were trying to rob a 38-year-old man. He was shot and hurt. As a result of this, don't know if he was carrying a gun and defended himself, but you have a shooting. Again, this is a couple hours after the last shooting. Are you getting the idea? All right. Then, First and National. Milwaukee police are investigating a hit-and-run crash involving a pedestrian that happened Tuesday morning. This would be around First and National, about 1:40 a.m. So this is now the fourth separate incident in, about 5 or 6 hours. Police say a 28-year-old Milwaukee woman was transported to the hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries. The investigation is ongoing. Milwaukee police continue to seek an unknown suspect. So here you have a hit-and-run that hospitalizes a woman. And then you have this story that is going on about the same time as the hit-and-run. Milwaukee fatal crash. Driver fleeing from police runs red light. A 24-year-old Milwaukee man is dead following a police pursuit and crash that happened Tuesday morning around 12:45 a.m. According to police, around 12:45 a.m., that would be last night, this morning, West Dallas officers were conducting an OWI investigation, that's drunk driving, in the area of South 57th Street and West Lincoln Avenue. So they've got a car pulled over. They suspect it's drunk driving. As officers were conducting the investigation, an unrelated pickup truck drove by the investigation at a high rate of speed eastbound on Lincoln Avenue. So the police are dealing with a drunk driver, as, you know, flashing lights and all that. What happens most of the time when people like come upon a scene and there's police and there's flashing lights? You slow down, right? That's just human nature. You slow down. Well, not around here. Apparently, this guy speeds up, or he's already going at a high rate of speed, traveling down eastbound on Lincoln Avenue. A West Dallas officer caught up to the pickup truck and attempted to perform a traffic stop. However, the driver failed to stop and, wait for it, fled from the officer. The fleeing vehicle turned southbound on 43rd Street and continued to flee southbound. The fleeing vehicle increased its speed. And I think the police are going to tell you it was going over like 90 miles an hour at this time, drives through a red light at 43rd and Oklahoma. As the car goes through the red light, the fleeing vehicle was struck by another vehicle eastbound on Oklahoma Avenue. The fleeing vehicle then lost control, struck an unoccupied car, and then a tree. The driver of the fleeing vehicle died as a result of this. And there is video that the news channels have. Matter of fact, if you follow me on Twitter, it's at JeffWagner620. I've got a link to one of the news stories that has the video of this. And it's like a surveillance camera that's up on a neighbor's house. And you can see this car just speeding by like a bat out of you know what. And it ends up slamming into a tree. The driver of the car is killed. The driver of the eastbound vehicle in Oklahoma, this is the one who presumably has the right of way, but bangs into the car that's driving 80 or 90 miles an hour. Thankfully, that driver was, in fact, not injured. Milwaukee police is conducting the investigation. Again, I've got a link on my Twitter account that in my note is how senseless. Yet another reckless driver fleeing from police crashes and is killed. And what's the old saying? Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. But there you have, in the space of 12 hours or so, you have just a rundown. And I don't claim that this rundown I just gave you is fully complete. These are just the stories that I found. Reckless driving, fleeing from the police, shootings, murders, shooting people in cars who then drive and smash into trees. You get an idea that this is the new normal around here. And you've got people dying. You've got people being injured. You know, what did we have? Did we have Peace Week a week or so ago? Well, obviously, people have not got the message. So with that in mind, I want to tell you about a conversation I had and yesterday that really kind of impacted something I had to do last night. My guess is I am not the only one who is doing that. I will share it with you in just a minute. This is Jeff Wagner, WTMJ. A couple people are texting in saying, hey, we want to watch the show, and we push the watch live button and it says the video is unavailable. All that means is during commercials, they turn off the cameras. So the watch live thing shows you when we're on the air. So if you hit the button and it says the video is unavailable, just wait till we come back from after the commercial, then hit it, and it will go back in. So that's just kind of how that works. Took me a day or two to figure that out as well. Okay, so we went through the carnage that is going on the streets. And this is one of our texters points out. This is a Monday night. You know, this is kind of a chilly Monday night, and you've got this kind of carnage. You've got car chases. You've got people dying because they're fleeing cops at 100 miles an hour. You've got people getting shot. It's a Monday night. It's not even like, hey, this is a hot evening, a hot Friday evening in July. This is what goes on in the mean streets of Milwaukee. So here's my story. Yesterday evening, early evening, we were going to see friends of ours who live in Wauwatosa. And the deal was we were going to go over to their house in Wauwatosa, and then we were going to go out to a restaurant we liked to dinner. So we were supposed to be there around 5 o'clock, which means you've got to figure out a way to get from where I live on the North Shore to where our friends live in Wauwatosa. So the freeways, especially, you know, 43 going southbound with all the construction that's going on, it's always a dicey proposition. And you never know. Sometimes it can move smoothly. Other times you can just be stuck in traffic for 30 or 45 minutes. So you never exactly know what's going on. So I was just trying to think of alternate routes that might have had gotten us from where I had to, where I started, to where we had to go. And I just, for kicks, I plugged into our GPS, you know, where our friends live. And as we're going down, the GPS kept wanting to get us off 43 and have us head west through the city. Get off on Locust Street, you know, drive from, you know, Locust 43 and Locust Street, drive off Locust Street, you know, get out to Wauwatosa. And I thought, no, I don't think about that. Okay, well, then it was like get off on Highland and drive across Highland, get off and do that. Then take Wisconsin Avenue. It was all these different suggestions that would have had you going through the city. And one after another, I considered it, and I thought, yeah, you know, maybe this might be a little bit faster, but it's just not going to be happening because I don't want to come across, you know, lights intersections where I'm driving through the intersection with the green light, and all of a sudden I happen to be that poor schlep that gets in the middle of one of these 100-mile car chases. And yes, I understand it wasn't 5 in the morning. It was around 5 in the evening. But if you listen to this, it doesn't make any difference. 5 in the morning, 5 in the evening, it's all the same. So we ended up taking what would be the longer way around, you know, get on, go to the freeway, go west on 94, you know, get off on like the 68th Street exit or whatever and go north. But, you know, you pretty much avoid the city of Milwaukee and the streets. Now, that's not a guarantee because, for example, this high-speed chase that resulted in the 24-year-old being hit by a car, losing control of his car, and then crashing into a giant tree, you know, that originated in West Dallas. So the fact that you're trying to avoid city streets isn't a guarantee that you're not going to get caught up in it, because it can happen in Wauwatosa, it can happen in West Dallas, but it does seem like a lot of this stuff centers around the city of Milwaukee. So I found myself, it wasn't like we weren't going to visit our friends in Wauwatosa, but it was this conscious choice I was making to say, you know what? I'm not driving these city streets because you don't know what's going to happen. And it really kind of breaks my heart to say that because as somebody who grew up on the North Shore, the ways that I used to choose to go from like the North Shore across to Wauwatosa or Brookfield or whatever, I mean, a lot of times I wouldn't use the freeways. What I would do is you'd go across Hampton, or you'd go across Capitol Drive, or you'd go across some of these other, you know, major streets, Silver Spring, etc. I'm not saying I never do that now, but I will tell you, I think second and third, and sometimes I'll think twice, sometimes I'll think three times, sometimes four times before I take those different routes, precisely because of this. Our number is 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. All right, because of the reckless driving, because of the out-of-control shootings, because of all these things that I'm rolling into, that this huge quality of life issue, you know, my question is, do you find yourself rerouting yourself in ways that you would have never thought of doing even as recently as 5 years ago? 855-616-1620. My answer is definitely yes. And I went through this again yesterday, and that's without even knowing all the stuff that went on from 5:30 last night till like 1:30 in the morning on a Monday night. 855-616-1620. Do you change the way you travel? We discuss in just a moment. 855-616-1620. Lori in Menominee Falls. Lori, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon. Lori?
Yes.
Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Okay.
How are you?
I am well, thank you. Do you find yourself rerouting when you have to drive around here now?
You know, I definitely do. I deliberately don't travel Milwaukee streets anymore. That's because I don't want to, not only the potholes, but I don't want to become a statistic.
Yeah.
But a byproduct of this whole, insanity driving and people being killed is that the businesses that you might have passed on those streets driving from east to west,
yep,
they're not getting your business anymore. You're not going past them and looking at the florist and say, oh, I'll stop at, you know,
yep,
Bob's Florist and buy a bouquet for my wife. So it's not only, and it's making Milwaukee more of a ghost town. So no, it's really sad.
No, you're right. No, thank, and it is all, I mean, thanks to call. It is all those related dominoes. You know, we talk about, you know, okay, we need to have more business development in various areas. And I agree with that. But the problem is, if you are a business person and you have choices as to where you're going to invest your money and what kind of stores you're going to open up and where, well, you're not going to put them in high crime areas. That's just the reality, because people are going to be reluctant to go there. You know, you don't want to have somebody, you know, walk into your convenience store and all of a sudden, what was the thing from late last week? All of a sudden, a gun battle breaks out between a bunch of, you know, teenage hoodlums who are all packing heat and start to shoot up the little mini mart thing. Then the people in the mini mart shoot back. And if this was an isolated event that hardly ever happened, you'd say, okay, it's a freak thing. It's not a freak thing. It's something that goes on every night. This was a Monday night. That was a Monday night, for goodness sakes. And in the space of like 6, 7, 8 hours, however many times that was, you know, how many shootings did you have? How many car crashes did you have? It's just staggering. Rachel in Waukesha. Rachel, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, Jeff. It's Rhett. Thanks. So I drive for my job, and I definitely think about the time of day when I have to go through Milwaukee, how I'm going to cut over, whatever. And I'm definitely driving more with your head on a swivel, because
yep,
the speed racers are coming up behind you so fast, and, you know, you're in the dilemma. Should you get out of their way? Should you change lanes? And then on the same token, you know, my daughter's home from college. She wants a good-paying job at a restaurant, and a lot of them are on the east side downtown, and I'm scared for her safety having to drive restaurant hours,
yeah,
and park or street parking and all of that. It's just, everything is just requiring so much thought and the risk. Is it worth the risk?
Well, that's it. I mean, I don't know about.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks for the call, Rachel. I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying with the head on a swivel. I mean, here's the way it is nowadays, especially if you're driving in an urban area like Milwaukee. Okay, you see, you've got a green light. I don't know. I always slow down as you're approaching the green light and look to the left and look to the right, because you don't know when you're going to see that car driving 80 miles an hour that blasts through. And it's not like you could say, okay, I need to be more attentive if it's 12:30 at night than if it's, you know, 12:30 in the afternoon, because the truth is this stuff happens all the time. Jeff, I work for the city as an inspector. I have to travel from the south side to the northwest side of Milwaukee daily. I intentionally travel along the border between Greenfield and Milwaukee and Wauwatosa and Milwaukee, so I don't have to pass through the city. I see people intentionally blow through red lights every day, multiple times a day. I see them Milwaukee slide at 60 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone daily. The city is absolutely out of control. Yes, and I mean, we're being overwhelmed with texts about this. Jeff, last Thursday evening, I was driving my son home from Waukesha to Grafton for a baseball game. I'm still somewhat new to the area. GPS took me to Silver Spring Drive, which I took east. At 95th Street, we were rerouted because two people were shot. There were a dozen squads there. At the game later, my son's parents told me that I was nuts for going the route I did. They told me to take a different route home. Yes. All right. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I want to shift the conversation just a little. I was going to do this anyways, but I have a texter that raises an interesting question. I will share that with you, and we will discuss. Would I be hacked off? All right. So we've got all these different news monitors that are going on now, and Donald Trump is, and we're going to talk about the Trump indictment again from a different perspective. We're going to do that in the 1 o'clock hour of the program. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, Summerfest starts a week from Thursday. My show will be originating from Summerfest on each of the Thursdays and Fridays. Summerfest now is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for 3 weekends. My show will be originating live each of the weekdays from Summerfest. And to get you in the mood for Summerfest, I've got a 4-pack of tickets to give away. We'll do that during the 1 o'clock hour of today's program. We'll give away a 4-pack of tickets. We do that every day this week. So anyhow, we've got all the different, we've got the NBC and we've got Fox and we've got CNN and we've got ABC. So we've got these news accounts that are up, and What's going on is Trump is showing up for his arraignment. What happens at an arraignment in federal court, he will appear in all likelihood in front of a federal magistrate. What is a federal magistrate? Federal magistrates are, no offense to my friends who were federal magistrates, but they're kind of like junior judges. Federal judges are appointed by the president. They are confirmed by the Senate. They serve lifetime appointments. Magistrate judges are lawyers in the community who are hired by the local federal judges. And what they do is they kind of act as junior judges. They'll handle pretrial motions, for example, and make recommendations to the district judge. They will handle initial appearances. They can issue search warrants. They will also handle arraignments. So typically, an arraignment is not going to be in front of the judge who's going to handle the case. It'll be in front of a magistrate judge. So what will happen today is Donald Trump will show up. He will appear in court. He will be notified of the formal charges against him. He will enter a plea, or a plea will be entered on his behalf. And then after that, he'll probably go to the U.S. Marshals Service and be processed, which means you're photographed, you're fingerprinted, things like that. At the arraignment, they'll also set bail. Now, he's going to be released on his own recognizance and things like that. And then, you know, then the case will proceed. But I'm watching this right now, and what's happened is he's leaving the Mar-a-Lago estate. He's Doral Country Club, and he's got a motorcade which is traveling from there on the freeway to downtown Miami. They've got the whole freeway blocked off. So there's just acres and acres of cars that are stuck on the freeway waiting for the Trump motorcade to go past. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, if that was me and I was trying to get from, I don't know, I was trying to get from Racine to Mequon, and I was going through downtown Milwaukee, and I found myself just stuck on the freeway because the whole thing is now closed down, I blocked off. I would not be a happy camper waiting for the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 7 cars in the Trump motorcade. But it's an amazing sight. It actually reminds me of the summer of 1994, the O.J. Simpson Bronco, not so high speed chase. I mean, it's, you know, where you had I remember where I was watching it. You had the helicopters that were up there and they were watching, you know, O.J. and the Bronco driving slowly and the cop cars following them. This is, I understand it's a different sort of thing, but it's very, very reminiscent of that. And I just keep thinking, man, if I was one of those people that had to be there and I'm now stuck on the freeway waiting for this to go by. So anyhow, if you turn on any of the cable news channels, what you're going to find is the helicopter up there, and they're just going to be watching. There's nothing really to see other than it's the Trump motorcade heading to downtown. But the thing, my big takeaway of this is just, man, can you imagine if you're stuck in this traffic and you got to be somewhere? And, you know, I don't know how long they're going to keep the freeway closed for this stuff, but it is huge news. First time, I think, in history that a former United States president indicted in federal court. We're going to talk more about that, like I say, in the 1 o'clock hour. But it is amazing TV. Not that there's anything going on necessarily, but a motorcade, you know, with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, looks like at least 7 different vans and 2 police cars as the former president heads to the federal courthouse in downtown Miami to answer charges. When we come back, a texter said it. I knew this was going to happen. I want to share that text with you, and then we're going to discuss it. Don't go anywhere. This is Jeff Wagner, WTMJ. Okay, so in the first half hour of the program, we talked about starting at like 5 o'clock last night, running till 2 o'clock in the morning, and just one shooting, one traffic accident after another, people dead, people in the hospital with hit and run. And it's just, this is a routine, this is a Monday night, for goodness sakes. And we have been swamped with texts, and most are similar to this. Jeff, Chicago has been a no-go for our family for many years now. I never thought I'd start looking at Milwaukee the same way, but we're starting to. I wanted to take my wife to dinner downtown Milwaukee the other night. She refused to go. I hope the politicians and powers that be in the city get their heads out of their you-know-where and start addressing these problems in order to get stuff under control. So, again, dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of texts with people telling all the different stories, and I could spend the next 2 hours reading them, and I think we'd all notice, yeah, that this is the way people feel. But there was a text that whenever I talk about this, there's always somebody, and I don't know if they sincerely believe this or if they're just disagreeing to be disagreeable, which we get. But this is, you know, one of the texts that I got. Now, for example, the 24-year-old guy that died last night about 1 o'clock in the morning, again, let's review the bidding. What happened is West Dallas police have pulled over a drunk driver. So they're there doing the investigation. You've got the bubble lights going and all this. While they're investigating the drunk driving case, what happens is a car driving at an extremely high rate of speed, actually an SUV, I think, you know, blasts by them. Okay, and I said earlier, you know, most times when you know, you come upon a scene and there's police cars that are there, what do? You slow down. Now, this car blasts past the police high rate of speed. So the West Dallas police, you know, they're dealing with the drunk driver. They call. They said, hey, there's this guy, car that just blew through us. So another West Dallas police finds the car a couple blocks later, going at a high rate of speed, puts on the bubble lights, and what happens? The car decides they're going to run from the cops, 80, 90, 100 miles an hour. They blow through a red light, and while they're blowing through a red light, there's a car that's in the intersection, has the right of way, that apparently bangs into the fleeing vehicle that's driving 80, 90, 100 miles an hour. The fleeing vehicle, the driver loses control, smashes into a parked car, and then smashes into this big tree. Car explodes. 24-year-old is dead. Okay, so that's the circumstances. Now, here was the takeaway one of the texters had. Jeff, maybe if they stopped chasing, you'll feel a little safer going places crossing the city of Milwaukee. Maybe if they stopped chasing, you'd feel a little safer going places crossing the city of Milwaukee. So in other words, the idea is when you see somebody that is, you believe, has committed a crime or is engaged in reckless driving, you know, going past the cop cars that are, in this case, investigating the drunk driver at a high rate of speed, the argument would be you should just let them go. Just let them go because you make matters worse by chasing. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. Okay, what do you think about that? Is that the solution to what is going on here when you see somebody driving recklessly who you try to pull over, and for whatever reason, they decide, and this unfortunately happens all the time now, maybe it's the car is stolen, maybe they've got a body in the trunk, maybe they're felons in possession of guns, you know, who knows exactly what's happened. But when that person makes the decision that they're not going to pull over, that they're going to run from the cops, is the answer, okay, we should just let them run from the cops? And I guess, I mean, let's look at what happened last night. Or the West Dallas police, they began the chase. Now, the car was already driving recklessly at a high rate of speed to begin with. So did the chase make it worse? Or was it reasonable to assume that the guy is driving at the high rate of speed anyways? If he's driving 80, he's still going to be driving 80, whether he's being chased or not. 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. Let's tee this up. Is the answer to dealing with the out of control, dangerous, irresponsible, reckless driving, should we say, okay, we're not going to chase anymore? Now, we did that. The city of Milwaukee did that for a number of years, and all it did was embolden the bad guys to simply run from the cops over and over again because they knew under very few circumstances would they be apprehended. Is it time to go back to that policy? 855-616-1620. Would that make things safer, allowing the reckless drivers, the car thieves, the people who will flee from the cops, the felon in possession of firearms, the people with bodies in their trunks? Would it make it better if we just let them drive away? 855-616-1620. I will answer that question in a moment, but I'm curious as to your response. 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Well, once again, we are being inundated with texts from people. Too many for me to read. But the general consensus is, don't you remember, Jeff, that this is the plan that Ed Flynn, the police chief, was forced into by Tom Barrett. Let's not chase people. And all that did was lead to more and more criminals that were out there running from the police because they knew they weren't going to be caught. It led to essentially open vehicle drug houses, and they knew that the cops wouldn't be able to chase. So, no, this is not a good idea of going back to the future. But I want to discuss this because it's true. I mean, the idea is, I guess, if you just let people drive off, well, the chances of them losing control, like happened to the bad guy last night and smashing into a tree and dying, or taking some innocent person with them, it becomes less if you don't chase. Assuming that, of course, the criminal who's fleeing from the cops in the first place isn't going to drive through that red light anyways. And you look at a lot of the reckless driving, a lot of the hit and run, it's not as a result of chases. It's a result of people driving in that reckless fashion. 855-616-1620. Jason in Mequon. Jason, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Jeff. Another caveat with, Mayor Barrett, third time's just a dry ride. It's no big deal. Let them go away. So, no, I agree. The police officers are doing their exact job, what they're supposed to be doing, law enforcement. It's, goes above and beyond that, where you got these softened, punishment judges or DAs that cop a plea and say, just probation. So what kind of message is that sending to the criminal element?
Well,
away with it and do it again.
Well, that's it. No, absolutely. No, thanks for calling. I mean, and that is the message that gets sent. You look at, for example, what is one of the reasons why people flee? Well, it's because they've got something to hide. It's because they're driving the stolen car, because they're the felon, they've got the gun under the seat or whatever. So if you think you just let them drive off, and to your point, Jason, and you're absolutely correct, especially when it comes to juveniles, I mean, the policy in Milwaukee County is just a joke. They're not going to try to wave people into adult court. It's going to be, this is the 12th car you've stolen. And, of course, we're not good enough to catch people the first time they're driving the stolen car. But the word is out that they know. Remember the Kia Boys video? That's what these people were talking about. They said, the chances of us getting caught are not great. And, even if we get caught, we're in juvie for like 2 days or something. Who cares about that? There's no disincentive to do it. But that to me doesn't mean that you simply throw up your hands and say, we're going to allow you to go ahead and do this, and we're not going to follow you. Now, at the same time, there needs to be you can't be reckless about this. And, that's why when you start these chases and things, you have to say, you don't want the police officer to get hurt and you don't want innocents to get hurt. So there's sometimes that you have to knock off these chases. I understand it. But at the end of the day, who is responsible for whatever bad thing happens when you don't stop for the police? Well, I'll give you three answers, three guesses, and the first two don't count. The person that's responsible is the person that's running from the cops. That's what sets this entire thing in motion. And I think, you look at what happened yesterday with the 24-year-old guy who was killed while he was fleeing from the police. And while any loss of life is tragic, right? The reason that happened wasn't because the police tried to chase him. The reason it happened is because the guy made the decision, number one, to drive in a reckless fashion in the first place. But number two, he made the decision that he was going to floor it and try to get away from the police and then set off this chain of events that ended up with his car smashing into this tree and he ended up dead. And it's why, I don't mean to be flip about this, but it's another one of these stories, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. And in this case, the stupid prize was the guy ended up losing his life, period. But the answer isn't to tell the cops, don't try to get the bad guys off the street. We're going to take a quick break after the top of the hour news. I want to talk about what is going on in Miami as we speak. This is Jeff Wagner, WTMJ. Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the show. I do find myself wondering these things. The band Kiss. Charlie, you're familiar with the band Kiss, right? Kiss is, I mean, has been, I mean, they have played stadium shows all over the world. And they've done it since the 1970s. You know, and Kiss, these are the big pyrotechnics and all that, this type of stuff. And they've been all over and just, you know, platinum selling albums and things like that. So right now they are in the midst of what they say is their farewell tour. They're calling it, interestingly, the end of the road tour. Their end of the road tour. And they've just announced the new booking. Where are they going in the end of the road tour? You know, is it going to be, are they playing, I don't know, in Amsterdam? Or are they playing in Tokyo? Where is the end of the road tour going to land? Crandon, Wisconsin, at the Crandon International Raceway. Now, I have not been to the Crandon International Raceway, but I have been to Crandon, Wisconsin. And if you're wondering, you know, how you get, you know, where Crandon is, it's, with all due respect, it's tough to get there from here. You kind of go out to Rhinelander, and then you head out. The reason I was there, now, this didn't happen when I was running for office, but when I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office, I was doing some civil work, and there was a case where a guy who was driving a postal truck, I always remember this case because he was accused of, like, running a guy on his bicycle off the road, and he sued the government. So I had to go up to Crandon, Wisconsin to look at the site and take depositions and things like that. So I have actually been to Crandon, Wisconsin. In any event, on September 1st, at the Crandon International Raceway, Kiss will descend for their show. You might say, what is the Crandon International Raceway? Well, it's about a 1.5-mile short course track, and it's apparently you can get 55,000 people into this. Now, I don't think you could. I think that's at all the different stands that they have. So I don't know what the capacity is. But I do keep wondering, if you're the guys at Kiss, and no offense to Crandon, no offense to the good people of Crandon, but you're the band Kiss, and you're kind of, you know, looking at your booking schedule. Okay, where are we supposed to be? Well, it's Tokyo, and then we're going to be at Amsterdam, and then we're playing this, and then we're playing that. And then, you know, on September 1st, we're up in Crandon. Crandon, Wisconsin. Where is Crandon? You have to wonder what the reaction is. Now, of course, you know, the answer, how are they bringing Kiss there? It's because this is something that the Forest County Potawatomi tribe is behind, and this is part of their entertainment thing. So I think that there's enough money to make it worthwhile. But you just got to wonder, if you're Paul Stanley or, you know, you're Gene Simmons, these principals of Kiss, and you're kind of looking at this going, hey, this is our farewell tour. Who booked us into Crandon, Wisconsin? Well, all right. Crandon needs entertainment too, and Kiss is coming there for their interestingly named end of the road tour. Okay. Right now, Donald Trump has arrived at the federal courthouse in Miami where he will be arraigned. As I was saying in the last hour, an arraignment, in all likelihood, it'll be in front of a magistrate, which is a junior judge. Magistrates are hired by the judges to do preliminary work. He will appear. He will be formally notified of the charges against him. He will enter a plea of not guilty, or it'll be entered on his behalf. He's either after the arraignment, or it could be going on now. He will report to the U.S. Marshals Service, and he will be fingerprinted, and he will, I would assume, be photographed. That's kind of standard procedure in this. Whether they make it public, I don't know. He will then also, there will be bail that will be set in this case. My guess is it's going to be a recognizance bond or something like that. But that's going on now. After the arraignment, which shouldn't necessarily take that long, they'll then motorcade back to, you know, his either Mar-a-Lago or Doral or wherever he's going to be. And I understand that he's going to hold a rally or something like that. But it is amazing sight that you have a former president of the United States who's been indicted. There are protesters out there, but not, at least based on what I'm seeing, not an enormous number. I mean, this is, I'm talking about hundreds, not thousands and not tens of thousands, but there are people wearing Trump flags and things like that that are out there. There is a significant police presence as well to make sure that bad things don't happen. But this is clearly a divisive time where you have a number of people who think that this indictment of a former president is politically motivated. It's a witch hunt. It's an effort by the Biden administration to try to take out the leading, Republican candidate. So there's a number of people that feel that way. The flip side is, as I said yesterday, this is a classic example of a completely self-inflicted injury. It just, to me, the underlying question has always been, why would you do something like this? I mean, you're not supposed to have these records in the first place, but regardless, you have the records, and then when you're asked to give them back, you don't do it. And that, to me, is one of the real staggering sort of things, because if he had given them back and turned all this stuff over, instead of piling up boxes of classified information in a bathroom, at Mar-a-Lago, I firmly believe that none of this would have happened. And that's one of the things that distinguishes this case from, well, Joe Biden had records in his garage. Well, when the Biden people found the records, they turned them over. Well, Mike Pence had records at his house. Well, once they found them, they turned them over. Trump, for whatever reason, made the decision not to. Now, there does not appear, and I understand there's some people who think that, well, here's what was really going on. He was planning to take these documents, and he was planning to sell them to the highest bidder. There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that that was, in fact, going on. It strikes me that this was just sort of this kind of arrogance and the rules don't apply to me that sort of characterized, I think, the 4 years of the Trump administration. But it doesn't appear that there were any national security breaches. By that, I mean, it doesn't appear that, this was given to hostile governments or that was the intent. It was just that Trump took these as prizes and just didn't think that, the rules, give them back, apply to him. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the old National Bank Talk and Text Live. This indictment is clearly divisive for the country. And it is a first, a former president being hauled into federal court and told that if convicted, if found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, he can go to jail. He can go to jail for this. I mean, theoretically. Our number, 855-616-1620, that's the old National Bank talk and text line. Here is my question. Absent evidence that he intended some nefarious purpose for these documents, and I don't think that they have it, assuming for the sake of argument that my theory of this, which I think is the correct one, is in fact correct, that he took them, he kept them, didn't think the rules applied to him, never thought there'd be consequences for this, assuming he wasn't trying to sell out the country, all right, is this prosecution justified, or should we have looked the other way? The Hillary Clinton email thing is different. But it's the closest analogy I think we can come with. And the decision was made, this didn't hurt national security, so we're going to let it slide. Should they have let Trump's situation slide? 855-616-1620, we discuss. So I'm watching all the media coverage of Donald Trump, who's now turned himself in at the courthouse for arraignment. And the screaming headlines, I'm looking at CNN right now, Donald Trump is now under arrest. I'm trying to think if that's technically correct. This is coming from my perspective of somebody who did arraignments and indicted people and with the U.S. Attorney's Office and was there for 12 or 13 years, I guess, in a very technical sense, you come in to the courthouse, you turn yourself into the U.S. Marshals, and then, you show up in court and they set bail. I guess I've never really thought of that as being under arrest. It's not like, hey, you've just run from the police and they've taken you off the streets and they've put you in handcuffs. This really, I understand it makes a better headline, and I guess I've just I don't know if it's technically correct or not, but the president has not been dragged in. The former president hasn't been dragged in and put in handcuffs or anything like that. It's just he voluntarily turned himself in. He's under the jurisdiction of the court. They will set bail. I've never really thought of that as being under arrest. Now, maybe technically, in a very technical sense, it was. But in all the years I prosecuted criminals, you know, when you'd have a white collar criminal, for example, that you allowed to you turn yourself in. Hey, this, you know, here we send you notice, show up. I never thought of them being under arrest, but it's a better headline, I guess, for CNN if they say Donald Trump is now under arrest. Okay, here is my question though: this is not a good thing for the country. I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. It's not a good thing to have a former president who has been charged. It's just not. And part of the problem here is this is it's a crime which, to the extent it is a crime, it's a tough to understand crime. Like I say, if there's evidence that he was selling these documents or something, that's different. But this is a situation where he took documents that he arguably, if you read the indictment, shouldn't have kept them, and should have returned them. I mean, that's the essence of it, that he failed to return them when he was asked and then arguably might have lied about it. That's what the contention is, but not that he was going to necessarily do anything illegal with these documents. So it is a, I'm going to use the word technical crime. I'm not minimizing this, but it's not like he went out and robbed a bank. It's not like he went out and was trying to sell these to North Korea or something. It was just he took documents, he kept documents he shouldn't have had, and he didn't return them when he should have. Is this the type of thing that we should be indicting former presidents for, who also, by the way, are running for office? And while I don't think it's necessarily correct, he is still perceived as being the top challenger to Joe Biden. Let's talk to Vincent in Lannan. Vincent, what do you think about this?
Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hi, Vincent.
I don't think they should have let President Trump slide on this for two reasons. One, he not only refused to return the documents, there's evidence in the indictment that he tried to hide the documents and involve other people, even in destroying the documents, of the documents. So second of all, he basically took these documents, top secret documents, and was showing the individuals who weren't even cleared to even see these materials. So how many other people did he just willy-nilly just take these documents and say, hey, you know, I got this top secret stuff, it's supposed to be secret, but hey, you know, you can look it over.
Why do you think he did it?
Because he's arrogant.
Okay,
arrogant. You know, Donald Trump has been skating on thin ice all his life. And the fact is, he's been getting away. He's been really lucky in getting away with it. The fact is, soon as that thin ice is going to crack, and now he's got a crack in that thin ice. And so, yes, they should indict him. The fact is, you do not take top secret documents, one, and try to hide them, and then try to have other people destroy them, and then basically show them to anybody you want to show them to. And so,
you would agree with me that you don't think his, and I'm not minimizing, because I don't disagree, by the way, with anything you said, but you would agree with me that when he was like showing these, it wasn't to give somebody an advantage. Here, this is what China's doing here. You can sell this yourself. You don't think it was he was trying to commit treason or anything, right? It was just kind of that arrogance. Look what I've got.
It was him being arrogant about the whole thing. You know, this is what I was involved in. This is what I do. But the point is, the issue, the reason why they put top secret on them.
Yep.
The fact is, people who do not have clearance should not be viewing these documents, because you don't know. Because the fact is, he doesn't know what these individuals are into or what they're going to do. But the point is, I didn't think, no, he was trying to, you know,
right,
do some espionage stuff and pass this stuff on. No, I don't think he was doing that.
No, thanks. I agree, like I said, I agree with like everything you said. One of our texters says, Jeff, there's no upside to this. I'll admit it appears there's some wrongdoing here, but is it so terrible that it couldn't be overlooked? And the argument is going to be that you know, Hillary Clinton and the server, and that's different. Matter of fact, a lot of Democrats, that one of the most popular things now is they're selling a hat that says "But the emails," and it's kind of like mocking Trump supporters who will say, "Well, you know, Trump might have done this, but the emails." That's sort of what it is. And the Hillary Clinton, maybe we'll go into this at some point in time. It's different. It's closer. Hillary Clinton's email server and things like that is admittedly, it's closer to this than, say, like Biden having some records and giving them back or Pence having some records. Jeff, there's no upside to this. I'll admit it appears there's some wrongdoing here, but is it so terrible that it couldn't be overlooked? This is only going to serve to further divide the country, and I fear possible riots if he is convicted. The optics of this are terrible. Prosecute one side and not the other. Let's talk to, Julie in Kenosha. Julie, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you?
I am well, thank you. What do you think about all this?
Well, I kind of agree with Vincent, your first caller. I'm kind of relieved, actually, that Trump is finally being held accountable for some of his behavior. I honestly cannot figure out why he did not just return the documents. Yeah. Makes no sense to me whatsoever. It's like if you're going to do that and say, well, I'm not giving them back, then you pay the price.
It is. You know, however this turns out, convicted, acquitted, whatever, that is going to be the question that is always going to be discussed. So, like with Watergate, it was President Nixon, you were going to slaughter George McGovern. Why would you, give any indication at all that you were going to help these Watergate burglars? It was completely unnecessary. And this is the same sort of thing. It's like you get a letter from whoever you get the letter for, say you've got these different documents. My God, they're in boxes in a bathroom. My response would be, you get your aides together and say, bundle all this stuff up and send it back. And you just check that off your list and then you go tee off. It is mind-boggling that you find yourself in this situation.
It absolutely is. The only thing I can even guess to is that Trump is just bad press, good press, bad press. It's all good press to me.
Yeah, well.
That's the only thing I can figure out.
Yeah, Julie, thanks for calling. I will tell you this. Anybody, and this is one of my rules of life, anybody who says that there's no such thing as bad press has never had bad press. And I don't care how you spin it, seeing your name at the top of an indictment, United States District Court, Southern District of Florida, United States of America versus, you never want to see your name there. Okay, we are going to continue this conversation. A lot of people want to weigh in. My question is this overkill? So hang on. Let me take a quick break. Back with more in just a minute. This is Jeff Wagner. For better or worse, this really is an historic day. You have, for the first time in American history, you have a former president who has been charged in federal court with federal crimes. And if you're just tuning in, former President Trump has appeared at the federal courthouse in Miami. And he has turned himself in. He's been what they call processed, which means you show up at the marshal's office. They take your picture. That's how it typically works with being processed. They take your fingerprints. He'll now go over to a courtroom where he will appear. I think the arraignment is technically scheduled for 2:00 our time. And he'll appear in front of what I presume will be a magistrate judge. He'll be told what the charges against him are. He will enter a plea. They will set bail. And then he will leave. I'm looking at, there's lots of people that are down there. And some are Trump supporters. Others are not Trump supporters. I swear, I think I've been to that federal courthouse. Back in the day when I was a narcotics prosecutor here, we did a lot of work because back in the 80s, a lot of cocaine that came into Milwaukee or Wisconsin came through South Florida. And so it was not uncommon, that some of our witnesses and stuff for these drug rings were down in South Florida. So we spent a lot of time there. And I've been to the Miami courthouse on a couple occasions. I think that's the same building that, I was at. And they've got, again, lots of security that's there as well. Right now we're talking about whether or not this is overkill. It's – look, no matter how you cut it, this isn't a good thing for the country that you have a former president who has been charged criminally. It's a bad thing. The question is, should the government have looked the other way if they believe they have a prosecutable case? 855-616-1620. Let's talk to Mike in Illinois. Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you?
Good. What do you think?
I don't believe it's overkill.
I think, as you said, it is probably the most similar to Hillary Clinton case. And I guess the main thing that I think about both of them is, in my opinion, there was obstruction of justice for, you know, Hillary, quote unquote, blowing up the server and Donald Trump not turning over the documents. If he just would have done that, as you said.
Yeah. Oh, still there, Mike? Oh, I'm sorry. Mike waited forever and we lost the cell phone. Well, at some point in time, I'm not prepared to do it this afternoon, but at some point in time, you know, we can talk about, if you want, the similarities and the differences. And there are some similarities and there are some differences in the Hillary Clinton server sort of case. But, you know, the decision was made that it wasn't worth going after her for what might be a technical violation. Now, that's different than this. But again, it's different. The facts are different, but you can say that it might be analogous if you wanted to do that. One of our texters makes an interesting point, said, Jeff, I agree with you. It's not good for the country, but I don't think it's overkill. Trump has pushed the boundaries throughout his political life without regard to the benefit of the presidency and our democracy. Now we have to do this to protect our democratic processes. 855-616-1620. Scott in South Milwaukee. Scott, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Jeff. Just for starters here, whatever. Back in 2016 with the Hillary Clinton stuff, I was one of those individuals, whatever, who thought that Hillary Clinton, whatever, should have been prosecuted because of the way she handled the situation.
Right.
Now on to the current topic with Donald Trump. All right. There are countless stories out there, whatever, of low-level staffers and low-level government employees walking out of buildings either intentionally, whatever, or by mistake, whatever, with sensitive documents that they shouldn't have been taking out, that they should not have been taking out of there.
Right.
Donald Trump was given, he was given every single, based on public knowledge and facts, Donald Trump was given every single possible opportunity to return those documents, whatever, but he refused to do it. And then the pile on top of it, based on the evidence that we know, he was obstructing. He was trying to hide it. The guy who I feel most sorry for is his personal aide, who we got to cooperate with him in this little scheme. So, I think Donald Trump should be prosecuted? Yes.
You know, it is. If some of the stuff that's in the indictment is true, if it's really true that he tells one of his lawyers, why don't you take this stuff to your hotel room and kind of go through it? Anything that's bad, just take it out. You know, pluck it out. You know, I'm going, really? What is your theory, Scott, as to why this happened? I mean, assuming that my theory is correct, that he wasn't going to sell this to the Red Chinese or anything like that. But why do you think he finds himself in the situation he's in today?
I think he's on a power trip, I think he enjoyed the trappings of power in being the president, and he wanted to show it. He wanted to show it off, whatever, to people who came and visit him at Mar-a-Lago. Because what's interesting, Jeff, whatever, is that every single president, whatever, when they're done, they always announce whatever where their presidential library is going to be located. So far, nothing out of Donald Trump about a presidential library. So what is that? So Donald Trump has no intention of sharing this stuff with anybody, whatever, but he liked the trappings of power and he wanted that stuff, whatever, in his possession. And he didn't want to give it back.
As I'm listening to your talk, I was just thinking that one of the pictures that they had where he's got all these boxes piled up in a bathroom, you know, it's just like, it's like, oh, okay. You've got all these sensitive records. Now, admittedly, they weren't all top secret, but you got boxes and boxes piled up in a John, for God's sake, you know, it's just like, really, you know, it's like, just send this stuff back. And then you got room to use the toilet, for goodness sakes. I just shake my head at this entire thing. And a couple people are questioning me about, well, why do you say it's bad for the country? Look, it's the sight of a former president, sight of a former president having to turn himself in to face federal charges. That is especially charges on what I am calling a technical violation of the law, because this is a technical violation of law. I'm not trying to minimize it, but it's not like even though this was charged under the Espionage Act. Nobody's alleging that he was engaged in espionage. Nobody's alleging that he took these for some illicit purpose. It's just he took them, wasn't entitled to them, and then obstructed justice by not giving them back. And I guess it is one of those things that make you just kind of like shake your head. And I understand that Trump, you know, brings out people feel they can't do anything wrong, and there's other people that feel that, you know, he should have been in jail a long time ago. But it's not good for the country, to see this happening. Bill in Newburgh. Bill, thank you for waiting. You're on WTMJ.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. What do you think?
Hey, you're really hurting yourself trying to make an issue of the bathroom. What about Biden in the garage and at a university, and who knows where his stuff is? And that was before he was even a vice president. And the vice president doesn't have authority to possess that stuff.
But Biden didn't know. Biden didn't know that the boxes were there. And when they found them, they gave them back right away. That's what the difference is. Yeah. If Trump would have given them back.
Trump was in negotiations. He was in constant negotiations. And the FBI had free access. They've been in Mar-a-Lago. And he has more than one bathroom. So the bathroom issue is kind of childish, I think, of you. I think it's beneath you.
What do you mean it's childish? He's got boxes piled up in a bathroom. I mean, well,
the other guy had boxes piled up in a garage. What are we getting at, a urinating match here?
Well, I think Trump would probably like that. But why are you defending this? Why are you defending this? Why are you defending him?
You better go to my chiropractor.
Why are you defending? Oh, my gosh. You know, I see, and this is the thing that drives me nuts about the people who are just in the cult of Trump, that you can't understand that he did something wrong. He was in negotiations. This has been going on for a year and a half. This is completely and totally self-inflicted. This could have just, if you would have, most normal people, you get a letter. You say, okay, I've got all these boxes. I don't even know what's in these boxes. We piled up all this stuff. It's in bathrooms. It's not like you're even using it. It's just piled up in bathrooms that are there. You've got confidential, you got national security stuff that you're not supposed to have. Most normal people, you get this letter. You call in an aide. You say, hey, did we really take this? Give it back. Call them up. What's this? We're in negotiations to do this. And then, yeah, the negotiations where we've given everything back, and then it turns out that wasn't the case. But I do not understand why people, even if you're part of that cult, why you defend what I believe is the indefensible. Now, the strongest argument that you can make is, yes, what he did something that was against the law. Yes, Jeff, you're right. He should have sent it back. But it's a double standard of justice. They should have prosecuted Hillary Clinton. So if she got a pass, Trump should get a pass. That's the strongest argument I think people can make. But don't try to tell me that, oh, he didn't do anything wrong. Let's talk to Peter in Wapaka. Peter, you're on WTMJ.
Hello.
Hi, Peter.
I think this demonstrates the two-tier judicial system that we have. We have one system for the rich and powerful and another one for everyone else. If I had taken these documents, the DOJ would not give me a year and a half to give them back. They would have said in a couple of days, we're coming to get them. And they would have handcuffed me, and they would have hauled me off right there. Here a guy gets to show up when he feels like it with his entourage, and it's a big deal. The national press covers it. I mean, this guy is an idiot to start with. I mean, to think that he could get away with this.
Well,
that's for his own vanity to show that I've been president. Look at all these secret documents I have.
Well, right. Thanks for calling. That is the bizarre. Everybody knows he's been a president. I mean, that's the other amazing thing to me about the ego and stuff. Okay, everybody knows that you've been the president. I don't think you. What was the phrase I used last? The acronym BMOC, big man on campus. I mean, I don't think among people who. Again, are huge Donald Trump supporters. I don't think he needs to wave around a top secret document for people to think that he's the big man on campus. It's just, It's just amazing to me. Now, I understand one of our texters, a couple texters, are making the point that, that there are people who feel that President Trump is going, former President Trump is going to become a martyr about this. You know, maybe. I don't know that this is going to change anybody's opinion on this. Again, I go back to my premise, though. It's just, it is bad for the country. It is a distraction. And, you know, I've read the indictment. And while I think it's fair to describe this as technical violations of the law, as opposed to you robbed a bank or something like that, or, you know, you were, if there's like election fraud charges that come out of Georgia or something, this is technical. But it's still, if you read the indictment, if he did what they allege he did, if they can prove that beyond a reasonable doubt, it strikes me that this is going to be an example of a technical violation of the law, which raises the question again of was it appropriate to bring the charges or not. But it's just, it's all so very unnecessary, and all it's done is make people dig in more. Now, after Trump got charged in New York with the state offense, it helped his fundraising, and all sorts of people sent him money. Small donors, big donors won't touch him anymore. I don't know how many times you can go to that well, and I don't know if the reaction among small donors is going to be, oh my gosh, Donald Trump's now been indicted here, we're going to send him $100 for his legal defenses or his political campaign. Don't know. Back with more in just a minute. This is Jeff Wagner.
Don't go anywhere. Jeff Wagner is back right after this.
It's ESPN Milwaukee's Jen Latta, and I have told you about the delicious pizza and Italian snacks that you can find at Proof Pizza inside St. Kate the Arts Hotel. But now there's even more to be excited about. The restaurant has added new sandwiches to the menu. Available every day from 11 to 4, you can enjoy items like the Red Rock Chicken BLT, the Meatball Hero, and more. Order from the counter at Proof or directly from the bar at St. Kate. Explore the new sandwiches and the rest of the menu at proofpizzamke.com.
Hi, folks. Cindy Storm Fisher and Julie Coombs here at Storm Fisher Investment Group with just one question. Are you happy with how your investments are growing? We've been helping people just like you for over 40 years, and we'd be happy to help you.
We have no agenda, no quotas to meet, and great relationships are our business. If you're looking for an advisory relationship like you've never had before, call us. Let's see if it's a great fit. Storm Fisher Investment Group, online at stormfisher.com.
See you soon.
Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Arbor Point Advisors, LLC. Storm Fisher, Arbor Point, and Securities America are separate entities.
Advent founder, Dr. Madan Kandula.
If you were formerly breathing properly and we just plugged your nose up, you're not going to like it. You're not going to like it for a few minutes. You're not going to like it for an hour. You wouldn't stand it for a day. If we're talking weeks, you're going to be clawing at the walls to get that thing off. And if we're talking months to years to decades, many of our patients are basically walking around with clothespins on their nose and they don't know any difference. They've never experienced what life is supposed to be like when you breathe properly, and so for them, they feel like it's normal. It should be no surprise that many of the folks that we treat have downstream conditions. So if somebody's nose isn't working properly, if somebody's throat isn't working properly, they're not breathing properly. And when you don't breathe properly, it creates problems for your body.
When you breathe well, you live better. Go to adventnose.com to schedule your appointment today.
Breathe well with simple solutions. Adventnose.com.
For your new roof, we'll give you the hands-down best lifetime workmanship warranty in the industry. You can count on Semper Fi to keep you safe, warm, and dry.
We keep you safe, warm, and dry, Semper Fi.
Progressive covers pets in our auto policy at no extra charge. Now, let's see what your dog has to say.
As a dog, I think Progressive's auto pet policy is... Oh, what is that? That's just my tail. Weird. Anyway, Progressive protects... There it is again. See? This is why I need protection. I'm so distracted. Nope, that is still my tail.
Progressive Auto Insurance covers pets for up to $1,000 in a car accident at no extra charge. And we think your dog would say that's great, too. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Coverage for cats and dogs included with the purchase of collision coverage and subject to policy terms.
My friend and I are taking a trip to Mexico this year, but neither of us speak Spanish. So we downloaded Babbel and started learning Spanish fast.
Want to start getting conversational in another language in as little as 3 weeks? Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons were designed by language experts to be the most efficient and effective way to learn a new language.
¿Cómo te llamas?
¿Cómo te llamas?
Babbel, language for life, celebrating 10 million subscriptions sold. Now try Babbel for free at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com.
This is Jeff Wagner on WTMJ.
One of the questions that you may have is why are we not seeing what is going on in the courtroom? If you turn on ABC, NBC, Fox News, CNN, those are the four I've got in front of me. You know, what you do is you see, you know, pictures from helicopters outside the courtroom, or, you know, cameras that they have on the street showing the people waving the Trump flags or holding the lock him up signs and whatever. And it's all outside the courtroom. And you might say, well, wait a second, why aren't they in the courtroom? It is because, unlike most state courts, I was going to say all, but I'm not sure about that. But most state courts allow cameras in the courtroom. For example, in Wisconsin, the presumption is that news cameras can be in courtrooms. Now, their judges have the ability to put certain limits on that and to say, okay, well, if we've got, for example, a victim of sexual assault, that you're not going to be able to film that person when they're testifying and things like that. But as a general rule, as part of the courtrooms being open to the public, the media is able to bring in cameras and you're able to televise, you know, what goes on in the courtrooms. Federal court is different. Now, there's been, and it's been that way, I mean, since it's been that way for forever. In federal courtrooms, cameras are barred, B-A-R-R-E-D. So you're not allowed to bring TV cameras or still photography or anything like that into the courtrooms. That's why a lot of times if you're watching coverage of a federal trial, they'll have sketch artists and things. They'll come in and they'll do drawings. But you're not allowed to have cameras in the courtrooms, and that applies to pretrial proceedings as well. It's sort of a throwback. It's anachronistic in a way. It's kind of a throwback to the old days where the feeling was that if you had cameras in the courtroom, it would be distracting to the jury. It would be – you'd have witnesses and prosecutors and defense attorneys who'd be playing to the crowd and stuff. I think – given the fact that you look at, you know, what goes on, and the fact that we televise state court proceedings all the time, not just in Wisconsin but across the country, it led to like court TV and court cam and all that sort of stuff. I've always thought it's kind of an old-fashioned rule, and I'm surprised that it hasn't been changed. But nevertheless, it hasn't been changed. So that's why you get the description. Reporters can be in the courtrooms, and they can tell you what happened. Like the report right now is that Trump is in the courtroom with his lawyer, and he's still — the last couple lawyers he had have resigned, so he's looking for lawyers that are actually going to be like front and center on this case. And the report is the special prosecutor is there with the people who are going to try the case. You know, everybody's there, but you're getting the reports as opposed to seeing it. It's because the federal government has a rule, the federal court system has a rule, no cameras in the courtroom. All right. We've got a lot of stuff coming up in the 2 o'clock hour of the program. Don't go anywhere. This is Jeff Wagner, WTMJ.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the program. First of all, I know I said I was going to give away the Summerfest tickets during the 1 o'clock hour, and somebody texted, what happened? Well, Trump happened. We were covering that, and we were discussing things, but we're going to do it right now. It feels like summer, which means the big show is almost upon us. This week, we are giving away a set of 4 Summerfest tickets every day. Well, actually, tomorrow I don't have a show, or I'm probably not going to have a show because of an early Brewers game, so we'll give away 2 4 packs on Thursday. But right now, I want to get you ready for the occasion. I've got a set of 4 Summerfest tickets. Let's give it to caller number 11. Caller number 11, 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. Caller 11 wins a 4-pack of tickets to Summerfest. And as we've been mentioning, we're going to be broadcasting live from the Summerfest grounds. I will be down there, I believe, it's 3 weeks this year. Keep in mind, it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for 3 consecutive weeks, starting on June 22nd, which is a week from Thursday. So my show is going to be originating from the Summerfest grounds. So come on down if you're down there between noon and 3 and say hello. Just an update on the ongoing arraignment of Donald Trump. He has, no surprise, waived the reading of the indictment. That's a typical sort of thing. You have a right to have the prosecutor read the full indictment to you, 37 counts. Nobody does that. He's waived the reading of the indictment, and he has, through his attorney, entered a plea of not guilty to all charges in the indictment. No surprise about that. And now what they're going to do is they'll set bail. My guess is it's some form of recognizance, and then he will leave the courthouse. Okay, Wyatt Barmore Pooley. Do you know who Treat Williams is?
I saw his name on Twitter, and it turns out I have seen him in movies. I did not know.
But you did not know him beforehand. You know, this is, for people who don't know, just backing up, Treat Williams passed away. That the reason his name is in the news is he passed away yesterday. He was involved in a motorcycle crash at the age of 71, and apparently he was riding his motorcycle, and a van turned in front of him, I guess is what they're saying happened. And he ended up Dorset, Vermont, which is where he lived. The van turned in front of him. He tried to avoid it, smashed into it, and ended up passing away. Here's the interesting thing about Treat Williams. There was a time where I think a lot of people thought that he was going to be a generational type of star. A star like a Paul Newman, like a Robert De Niro, like an Al Pacino. He was a Broadway performer. I'll get to that in just a second. But he started off doing like Broadway shows. He was in Greece for years. You know, in the early 70s, he probably came to fame in 1979 when they did the film version of the movie Hair, which was, of course, the big counterculture movie of the 60s and 70s. And he had one of the leading roles in that. After that, he had a role in 1941, which was a comedy made by Steven Spielberg. And this is like early in Spielberg's career. It's like before E.T., but it's after Jaws. And it stands out as one of the few things that Spielberg did that was a bomb.
It didn't work.
It was an awful, awful movie. But he had a role in that. And then in 1981... He was starred in the movie called Prince of the City, which was an incredible motion picture. He played a detective who was taking bribes, and it was sort of based on a true story. But his performance was incredible. So you've got, you know, Hair, you've got Prince of the City. I saw him in Broadway, 1982. He was in Pirates of Penzance, you know, the old Gilbert and Sullivan thing, and I happened to see that show on Broadway, and he had the lead role in that. He was the Pirate King, but this incredibly talented guy who went on to have an extensive career. I mean, I'm just looking through his filmography. He probably did like 40 or 50 movies, and he had various roles in different TV shows, including a starring role in Everwood about 20 years ago, which was a TV show on the WB. But he was one of these guys who was incredibly talented. You thought he was going to be a superstar, and he made a great living, don't get me wrong, doing stuff, but he just never quite became that superstar. I mean, he was a working actor and did all sorts of things and had recurring roles on TV, but he didn't, and it's always interesting to me as to what it takes to break through, to be that Paul Newman character or the Al Pacino or whatever.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the career of Mark Hamill, who did Star Wars, but then didn't do a whole lot else, but then he's been, you look it up, he's been steadily working for the past 30 years.
Right.
And he's made himself a great career. He sort of reinvented himself as a voice actor.
Right.
But Mark Hamill's in the biggest movie ever, but then he didn't have the Harrison Ford career.
That's a very good example. Right. That's a very good example. That's a great one, because Harrison Ford goes to Star Wars, and he does the Indiana Jones franchises and all these
Fugitive,
other things.
He's got all kinds of other stuff.
That's exactly it. You know, and that's a very good analogy, because I would have thought that given how hot Treat Williams' career was in the beginning, I would have probably said this guy is going to have a Harrison Ford type of career, because he was a good looking guy, he was a good actor, he's got a cool name, but talented. I mean, the guy was he performed on Broadway, he could do all this sort of stuff. You would have thought that this is one of the things that would have taken off. And again, he was a working actor, not diminishing that, but he never quite made that breakthrough to movie superstar. And I always see that a lot, Wyatt, with musical performers as well. There are so many, you go to shows and you see these like touring casts and stuff, and you see so many people who are so incredibly talented. And you know there's so many people out there, and you always wonder, okay, what is it about Wyatt that, you know, makes the breakthrough and goes on to become the superstar, when there's other people who are arguably just as talented as talented Wyatt, who just end up waiting tables and then selling insurance, not to knock people who sell insurance or wait tables.
It's all timing.
timing and being in the right place at the right time and catching on. Yeah, that's. I'm a Jimmy Buffett fan, and we you know, Jimmy Buffett would be the first to tell you he doesn't have the greatest voice at all, but he was just he kind of had this he developed this like little shtick that
yeah
that
Jimmy
broke
Buffett
through.
Is like one of the greatest of finding a niche and then just. Conquering the niche.
Yeah, it's exactly.
There's just Jimmy Buffett.
Right, exactly. There can be some imitators and stuff, but they're never the same. And I'm sure there's all sorts of like really, really talented singers and songwriters who go, this guy wrote a song about Margaritaville and it spawned this entire, you know, generation of parrot heads and things
franchises
like that.
Of restaurants.
It's just amazing. But that's with the passing of Treat Williams. And I guess I was surprised a little bit because I've always liked him. I just... 1978 to 1982, just incredibly, incredibly hot and working career, but passes away at the age of 71 in a motorcycle accident. All right. If you think we have traffic problems around here with all the road construction, you, by the way, are right. You are absolutely correct, and it's going to. I have somewhere I have to be this afternoon, for example, and somebody said, "Well, can you make it by this time?" And I said, "Well, it just kind of all depends because when you try to get on the freeway from where I work, it could be or it might be. You know, who knows what surprises that you are going to find because between the construction and the crazy driving and accidents or disabled vehicles, you never know." And so I said, you just kind of have to hang out. I'm going to try to get there as close as I possibly can. But, you know, some stuff is beyond my control. So, you know, if you think we've got troubles and you've got troubles in your commute around here, you're correct. But if you want to talk about troubles with hair on them, this is what's going on in Philadelphia. I don't know if you've been following the story, but in Philadelphia, Sunday, what happened is they had, and maybe you've seen this picture, there's a bridge that carries Interstate I-95. And what happened is a tanker truck carrying 8,500s of gasoline was trying to round a curve on a ramp off the highway, and it flipped onto its side. The gasoline started leaking. The gasoline exploded. And what ended up happening is this is just this inferno. They haven't announced this for sure, but it appears that the driver of the truck, it appears that he died in this. But you have this massive explosion. And if you look at the video of this, if you've seen it, it's absolutely staggering because, I mean, a tanker truck full of gas, 8,500 gallons of gasoline, it ignites. The fire reaches temperatures high enough to compromise the strength of the steel and the concrete, and the ramp ends up collapsing. Okay, so, I mean, it's a horrible situation. In addition, if you look at the numbers on this, this bridge carries 160,000 vehicles a day. Let me say that again, 160,000 vehicles. In order to, and again, we're talking about a major interstate right by a major East Coast city in Philadelphia. In order to like reroute traffic, some people are having to go 40 miles out of their way, you know, just to get around this. It is a nightmare of epic proportion. But at the same time, it's a freeway ramp collapse. So here's the aspect of the story that I think is so very interesting. Authorities are saying, and the governor of Pennsylvania is out there saying that he expects the repairing of the damaged section of the interstate to take months. To take months. He says we're in an unlucky situation where the fire occurs just underneath a structure. So they think it's going to take months to repair this freeway overpass, this freeway off ramp. And again, if you look at the pictures, it's clearly trashed. I'm watching this story though. As a matter of fact, there's something in the Wall Street Journal that kind of makes this point. Here is my question. In 1969, and I know this because I was watching it on TV. We landed a man on the moon, all right, in the space of like 10 years. You know, we started the space program. We were able to send men to the moon, and we landed men on the moon. And you know what? We brought them back safely. Now, that's 1969. All right, my question is, okay, we are now in 2023. So, you know, do the math. However many years that's been, you know, since the moon landing, 50 plus years. If you could send a man to the moon in 1969, how in God's green earth can it take months to repair, I don't know, a stretch of freeway that is depends on, again, that carries 160,000 cars a day? And they say it's going to take months. Now, I understand what you've got to do is, I mean, I understand that there's a lot to building off ramps and stuff, and this is clearly trash. So I understand you got to get people in there. You got to do the structural support. I understand that there's a lot of work that needs to get done on this. But the idea that you need to take all this time is beyond me. Remember 1994, there was the earthquake over the LA, the overpasses in Los Angeles. Remember, it was like going on during the World Series and things like that. And they originally said it would take like 2 years to repair the bridges. Well, okay, the governor issued emergency orders, cut red tape, and they were able to, instead of 26 months, they were able to do it in 84 days, which was close to 3 months. But that was decades ago. Our number is 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. I understand that there's a lot to go on here, but it would seem to me, given how significant this particular stretch of freeway is and this off-ramp, 160,000 cars a day, it would seem to me that we should be able to figure out a way to get crews working 24/7, if that's what needs to be, and get this thing replaced in, I don't know, a month, maybe even less. 855-616-1620. It's mind-boggling to me that we say it's going to take months to do that, because at the end of the day, I'm not saying cut corners, but at the end of the day, you're repairing a relatively small stretch of freeway / off-ramp. 855-616-1620. If I was a commuter who traveled this regularly, my response would be, what do you mean it's going to take months? We put a man on the moon in 1969. 855-616-1620. We discuss. But there's no question that this bridge collapse, this ramp collapse that happened Sunday in Philadelphia, horrible story, tanker truck full of gasoline, 8,500 gallons, flips on its side, explodes. The driver, it appears that the driver was killed in the fire, and now the bridge, the off ramp and stuff is compromised. It's got to be replaced. Okay, I understand all that, but the governor is saying it's going to take months. I'm like, what do you mean it's going to take months? This is there's 160,000 cars that use this stretch of freeway every day. 14,000 commercial trucks use it every day. They're now all going to have to be rerouted, some as many as 40 miles. And I'm like, okay, just get this done. How can it take months to do this? Get construction crews in there, work 24/7, get this done. To show you what happened in 2007 in Oakland, California, where three freeways met, they had an exploding tanker fire similar to the one in Philadelphia. They got it fully rebuilt in 26 days. Where there is a will, there is a way. Jeff, I think this is only because the contractors and everybody else wants their money to rebuild the bridge. I can't remember if it was China or Japan, but they had a quarter mile of freeway in both directions wiped out due to a landslide. 19 days later, it was up and running. Seems like we have no work ethic around here. 855-61. I don't know if it's work ethic, but it's okay. I would think this would be a priority. Tim in Waukesha. Tim, you're on WTMJ.
Yeah, you know, I think you just mentioned it. Just shortly after 9/11, that kind of like the same thing happened out on L.A., and it was like a ramp you know, a truck, same thing, same scenario. And the construction guys out there said, well, we'll get this back up in, you know, a few weeks. You know?
Yeah.
And like, it didn't take them, you know, months.
No.
It took them, you know,
weeks.
A,
no.
Maybe a month. I don't know. But.
Yeah, no, thanks for calling. That's, and again, I understand that there's lots of damage to this, but months? I mean, seriously, get crews out there, work 24/7, get the bridge rebuilt. You know, a number of people are making the point that it's, you know, if you wanted to get this section of freeway that collapsed, if you wanted to get it built sooner, there's all sorts of ways to do it. And that's sort of some of the things that they did in California. What you do is you waive some of the rules. Maybe you use some non-union workers or things like that. And you just prioritize this. But I just don't understand how if you got a freeway that closes 140,000, that services 160,000 cars a day, how you can simply say, okay, well, this bad thing happened. We're going to stretch this out for months. We have to be able to do better. The latest news on the Trump arraignment is apparently he has entered a not guilty plea. No surprise there. And he's going to be leaving court very shortly. The judge has said that, interestingly enough, the judge has ruled that Trump cannot talk to his valet, his indicted aide, about the case. I'm not sure what exactly that is all about. But if you want to look to somebody to really feel bad about, it is this aide who kind of the valet who kind of just like got dragged into this entire situation and now finds himself looking at all sorts of charges as well. Much more of that, I think, as we go on. Okay. All right, let us completely switch gears. We've talked about the Trump indictment. We've talked about crime in Milwaukee and all the stuff going on in the mean streets of the city over the course of the last 24 hours. Something completely different and something a little bit lighter. My wife, as I've told this story before, she loves the Hallmark Channel. Okay, she loves the Hallmark Channel, and she's all excited that starting in July, they bring back all the Christmas movies. You know, so it's like Christmas in July, and she's all excited about that. To me, and then starting in October, they show the Christmas movies over and over and over again. And it's a push for me. I understand why people love them. I get it. It's just, to me, the Christmas movies, you know, maybe a couple days before Christmas, and then after Christmas rolls around, I'm ready to move on. But I understand that people are different. I understand that the Hallmark Channel is incredibly popular, and I understand that people like the Christmas movies. And they, one of the actresses that they use is the gal from the original Wonder Years, like Danica McKellar or something like that. And I saw a promo the other day that she's coming back with the latest ones. And okay, so people love that. So you got that. Then the question becomes, okay, what does my wife like to watch when the Christmas movies aren't on? Well, we turn to the Game Show Network. And she has been addicted to Family Feud. Now, not the old Family Feud with like Richard Dawson and things like that, but the new Family Feud with Steve Harvey, where you have two, if you've never seen Family Feud, what it is, it's like two animated groups of extended family. And they're all cheering. And what they do is the survey asks, you know, and it'll ask you a question. We surveyed 100 people and we asked them the question, you know, fill in the blank. When my husband gets whatever, you know, it's one of these things. And then people slam down the buzzer and they, you know, they decide, they try to get points by answering these various survey questions. And so my wife loves this. And she's, you know, part of the thing that makes it, she says, I really like Steve Harvey. And so she likes to watch it. So this, and it seems to me they show this thing all the time. I have no idea how many of these episodes they film, but now I'll walk into the kitchen or I'll walk into the bedroom and the Game Show Network will be on. It'll be Family Feud or it'll be the Pyramid Game. It used to be Dick Clark's $20,000 Pyramid. Now I think Michael Strahan runs it. But you've got these game shows. To me, game shows are kind of like going to the dentist and having your teeth drilled without Novocaine. It's just, but that's just me. I understand. So you've got the game shows, you've got the Hallmark Channel. I was wondering though, because I understand that there's a lot of people that love game shows. The most popular game show that is on nowadays. All right, now think about this for just a second. Jeopardy. Okay, Jeopardy is number one. Number two, think about it for just a second, Wheel of Fortune. And Wheel of Fortune, which has been around for like 40 years, Wheel of Fortune still regularly draws 8 million viewers daily. 8 million viewers daily. Still watch Wheel of Fortune. Everybody understands the Wheel of Fortune game. I have to confess, I have not seen Wheel of Fortune in years. But, you know, you spin the wheel and then tell it. Then you say, is there a W? Is there an R? All those sorts of things. And then you try to guess the puzzle and you win stuff. For 40 plus years, the host on Wheel of Fortune has been Pat Sajak. Pat Sajak announced yesterday on social media that this upcoming season is going to be his last. He's 76 years old. My guess is Pat has all the money that he could possibly need, and he's just announced that, hey, this upcoming season, this is going to be it. I'm pulling the plug. I'm going to retire. Don't know whether his letter turner, Vanna White, don't know whether she's going to retire as well, although the speculation has always been that they're kind of a package deal, and when one retires, the other one will retire. But Pat Sajak says he's pulling the plug. Just says, hey, it's been a great run, but it is time. They've made a deal with him. He's going to continue as a consultant for 3 years after his final season. And they don't know who is going to replace him as of yet. He just announced it. And again, he's going to do one more year. So this is sort of a long goodbye. He's going to do one more season as the host. But there, I don't know, just like Alex Trebek was identified with Jeopardy. I mean, he was the host on Jeopardy for decades and decades until he passed away. I think you can make a strong argument that Pat Sajak, I'm not sure that there's another host in television that has been more closely identified with a particular show than Pat Sajak has with Wheel of Fortune. Here is my question, 855-616-1620, completely different than everything we've talked about in the balance of the day. All right, does the game survive? Does Wheel of Fortune go on, continue to be successful with a replacement? Or is this sort of the beginning of the end? Will people follow the game, or did they follow the host? 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. Now, lots of shows have replaced hosts. You can make an argument that Jeopardy's not the same after Alex Trebek passed away. People still watch Jeopardy, but is it the same? 855-616-1620. Will the game show survive without Pat Sajak? Or is the game bigger than the host or vice versa? 855-616-1620. Wheel of Fortune fans, what do you think? We discuss in a moment. Which is the Old National Bank talk and text line. This is something completely different. Wheel of Fortune, known as many of you are texting me, simply as The Wheel. Now, the game show has been around since January of 1975. It originally debuted, it was on NBC as a daytime show and was originally hosted by Chuck Woolery. There's a name from the past. What happened is he dropped out in 1981, and he was replaced by Pat Sajak. And then the network show was canceled a few years later. But the syndicated nighttime show, which, you know, everybody watches now, you know, that's been around for, well, I mean, Sajak has been doing that show for 40 plus years. He's just announced that he's decided that at the age of 76, 41 seasons is going to be it, and he's going to be stepping down. They haven't announced who is going to replace him. My question is, what is going to happen on this? And is this going to hurt the show? 855-616-1620. Jeff, I think it depends on the replacement host. I would think you would need somebody who is geared towards the correct demographic. Maybe somebody like Tom Hanks or another similar star that is not in as many movies anymore. I'm not sure Tom Hanks, and I appreciate the demographic idea, I'm not sure that Tom Hanks' career trajectory would be coming in and hosting Wheel of Fortune. Number of people, I'm not sure if it's tongue-in-cheek or not, are saying, hey, sounds like a perfect gig for Aaron Rodgers. I don't know that. Jeff, I hate to admit that I watched The Wheel. Well, there's nothing to hate to why about it. I mean, it's I get how you get sucked into these shows. I watch Gold Rush, for goodness sakes. I'm not going to be coming down on anybody for watching Wheel of Fortune. I hate to admit that I watched The Wheel. Most of it for me was Pat Sajak's sly, clever, and dryly cynical sense of humor. I'll miss him, but change is a constant in life. The show's going to be fine. I often visited my parents, and they were listening to it on the radio, which was, of course, absolutely ridiculous. Jeff, I don't think it's going to be heard at all. 40 years is a long time. A new host would have big shoes to fill. As you stated, some could argue that Jeopardy has faltered as well. If Wheel does continue, it would benefit perhaps from rebranding, refreshing to bring in new viewers, retain current. It's a household staple, and I'd love to see it continue, but it's going to need to be done creatively and with purpose. Yeah, I think that's it. Jeff, just like Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune will go a long way. My wife and I still watch both shows. It's the shows that keep us sharp. It is kind of like doing crossword puzzles. Interestingly, I think maybe one of the parallels that are out there, and a number of texters are making this point, is that Price is Right. There was a period of time when it comes to like the daytime TV shows, Price is Right was dominant. And who was the host of the Price is Right forever? Well, it was Bob Barker. And, what you saw is that, Bob Barker stepped down, gosh, that's like 10, 15 years ago, and they brought in Drew Carey, the comedian formerly of the Drew Carey Show and stuff. And he's been hosting the Price is Right since Bob Barker stepped down, and so it's still succeeding. So that tells you, in many respects, if the game is good, it's the game, it's not the host. I mean, think back to the example I was giving with Family Feud. If you can remember the original version of Family Feud, it had Richard Dawson, who up until that time, Richard Dawson's claim to fame is he'd been one of the co-stars of Hogan's Heroes. That was his claim to fame. And, they brought him on and, he did Family Feud. And if you watch some of the old Family Feud episodes with Richard Dawson, it was really kind of creepy because he kissed all the women and he kissed them in sort of a kind of way. But you go back and you watch this. Richard Dawson's shtick from the 70s would not play in 2023. I'm just here to tell you about it. I'm just here to tell you that. But it was, Richard Dawson was closely identified with Family Feud. And then, they brought the show back and now you've got Steve Harvey. Jeff, I love the show. So sad to see him go. I hope his daughter takes over. That's at least the rumor. And I hope the show goes on with his name and a part of him. Jeff, I think Pat and Vanna were the dynamic duo. It's hard to follow that up, even if it's Pat's daughter that was there. Well, it's definitely going to be a challenge. Jeff, as enjoyable as the game is to watch and play along at home, when somebody is host for that long, they become part of the family, and when that person either retires or passes away, it's really hard to see someone else in that role that you're used to seeing for so many years. I honestly think that when Pat leaves, it's going to be the beginning of the end. It might work for a few years, but I don't see it being an extended amount of time. It's going to be interesting to me to see what happens. And Jeopardy is laying the groundwork. I think because Alex Trebek was so identified with Jeopardy, it's tough to replace that. Now, I understand Jeopardy is still extremely popular, and there's no doubt about that, but I don't know that you hear anywhere near as much buzz about the various replacement hosts they found as you did with Alex Trebek. And I don't care how compelling the game is, the hosts become part of your family, the hosts become your friends, and I think it's going to be very, very difficult to replace Pat Sajak. Pat, I'd like to buy a vowel.